The last time we left Esther in what we might call the preparation phase of the king's not so wonderful plan for choosing a new queen. I kind of had the passing thought when I was young and was looking for a wife, why didn't I do this? Never mind. Now, as the saying goes, the plot thickens here. And the last time, I was pretty hard on Mordecai and Esther. I don't believe they belonged in Shushan in Persia in the first place. I also don't think they had any business allowing Esther or putting her or whatever was there into this royal contest. And I don't think really that any Jews belonged in Persia after the Lord had said, "You go back now." However, I have also been stressing the sovereignty of God in all the affairs of men, of the kings, of the nations, and otherwise. Therefore, we need to be careful sometimes how we view people who we think are in a state of disobedience. Now, I would think that Esther, Mordecai, and all the other Jews that are living in Persia are essentially in a state of disobedience, since Cyrus had said, "Go back," and 50 some plus thousand of them did. And the reason we need to be careful is because we tend to make judgments about the whole being of a person, sometimes based on a single action or a single trait. I think that's dangerous ground. Just because these two and many others did not participate in the return does not mean they were horrible people. If you think about the whole scope and the purpose of the book of Esther, even though God is not mentioned in it, what was he doing? He was saving a great number of his people. They hadn't been obedient. They hadn't returned. They didn't belong outside the promised land. They knew they had served their 7 years of captivity. This whole thing here is God's getting them out and protecting them while they're there. We all have our own flaws, each and every one of us. That doesn't mean that we can't or that we don't do many other things quite well. The biblical principle that's at work there is improper judging or judgment. Jesus makes something very clear in Matthew verse chapter 7 where he writes this, "Why beholdest thou the mote that's in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that's in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, 'Let me pull that mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye'?" And then Jesus does what only he can do the way he does it. "You hypocrite. First cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast the mote out of thy brother's eye." He didn't say the mote wasn't in the brother's eye. There's something there. His point is improper, incorrect judgment. So this evening, I want to address Esther's character based on the text, but we have to consider it carefully. Remember, just because she is still in Persia and she is still in this beauty contest, that does not mean that Esther is this horrible, untaught, uncouth, worthless, wicked character in just a beautiful body. We have to be careful. So the first thing we want to look at is Esther's turn. Chapter 2, beginning in verse 15. "Now when the turn of Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her for his daughter, was come to go in unto the king, she required nothing but what Hegai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed," note that word, "and Esther obtained favor in the sight of all them that looked upon her." Father, be with us as we investigate this lady you used. Help us to be careful in how we make judgments about her and her character and what she and Mordecai are used to do for you. Father, might we take the things that we can learn about her, even though we wouldn't consider her to be a godly example, but learn from them. In Jesus' name, amen. There are two ways to look at this verse, not the interpretation of it, one interpretation, many applications, but the motivation of Esther when it came to be her time. First thing, she was wise enough to defer to her advisor, Haggai. She actually listens to Haggai. We've already known that he's taken a special interest in her. The text says she required nothing but what Haggai appointed. Pointed is a strange translation, at least to me. It's one of the most common Hebrew words in the entire Bible, in the entire Hebrew lexicons. When you get your, what's the name of that Hebrew book that Colin made us use? It was a little short, little skinny book, and it had all the Hebrew words in it that were used 50 times or more, and it didn't take a whole lot of pages. And then the back section had some that were used 100 times or less than 25 times and less than 10 times, just a few pages in the back. The very first page, this word is on it. It's that common in the Hebrew language. And we use it all the time. When we say, so-and-so said, you're using this word. It's amar, to say or to speak. It occurs 5,308 times, I think it is. That is a common word. It's right there in the first page of the most common words in the Hebrew lexicon. Amar, to say or speak, to utter. So whatever Haggai said, whatever he spoke, whatever he uttered, Esther did it. It's that simple. Oh, how I wish my children were like that. How the Lord must want me and you to be like that. He said, now you're not laughing. Me either. Whatever the words the Lord speaks, we do. Here we have this young Hebrew woman, drop dead gorgeous, but not living for Yahweh. Yet, she is wise enough to obey the words of her pagan advisor. I hardly know where to start when I think about that. So we're going to skip a little bit for a second, and we'll come back to it. Jesus gave an interesting lesson that Luke recorded. You might want to turn to Luke chapter 16 with me, because there's 7 or 8 verses here we want to read. Luke chapter 16. Look at me at verse 1. This is Jesus, Amar, speaking. He said unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man. He had a steward. The same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. So the rich man called him in and said to him, how is it that I hear this of you? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest no longer be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, here he is thinking on his feet, fast as he can, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig. I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his Lord's debtors to him, and he said to the first, how much do you owe my Lord? The debtor said, 100 measures of oil. And he said, take thy bill, sit down quickly, and write out 50. Then he said to another, how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take thy bill and write out 80. That's 80. Here's the verse. And the Lord commended the what steward? Unjust steward, because he had done wisely. And then Jesus adds the lesson. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. I think that kind of principle applies to Haggai and Esther. There's a lesson there for me and you, too. Sometimes the lost can give us better advice on the ways of their world, this world, than Christians can give us on their pagan world. So be careful how quickly we judge, even those that we do not think or don't think like we think. In certain areas, their advice may just be better than we can give on our own. I guarantee you, if I want financial advice, I'm going to go to the best guy I can find. Now, I'd prefer it if he was a believer, but he just might not be. When I go to get treatments in the future, maybe, I'm going to want the best doctor Novant can have. And Jamie's going to tell me who he is. I'm really not going to ask him if he's a believer, and with the intent of saying, well, I can't have you then. Second way to look at this passing comment. If the Lord could use a donkey to rebuke a prophet, he can use a lost person to advise a believer. Second way to look at Esther's motivations might be she was simply so beautiful that she or it didn't matter how she adorned herself. Just maybe, really didn't matter what Haggai would recommend for Esther to adorn herself with. Maybe she was just so unbelievably beautiful that the king was instantly smitten. A Dallas scholar from a number of years ago, maybe when Bill was there, I don't know, when the school was still a good school and a reliable school, wrote this: both Josephus and the Jewish rabbis exaggerated the beauty of Esther and elaborated on her virtues and piety. The rabbis held that Esther was one of the four most beautiful women in history, along with Sarah, Rahab, and Abigail. Josephus maintained that Esther, quote, surpassed all women in beauty in the entire habitable world. Wow. Well, exaggerated or not, she must have been one beautiful lady with great poise and great charm. We'll look at more of that in a minute. In any event, it is her turn to go spend the night with the king. Verse 16, back in Esther, chapter 2. So Esther was taken unto King Ahasuerus into his house royal in the 10th month, in the month Tebet, which is the 7th year of his reign. Spend the night, get married later. See why I'm so hard on these characters? All right. It's Esther's turn. Esther is crowned Miss Persia. She visits the king, and he is simply blown away. Verse 17. The king loved Esther above all the women. She obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Remember Vashti? It has been 4 years. What is it that the king saw in Esther? What made him love her, as the text says, above all the women? Well, for just a few minutes, let's see what we might discern from the little bits, and they're only little bits, of information we have about her. What might there be in this woman's character? First, she carried herself with grace.
Where do you see that in the text, Pastor?
Here it is. Look at chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. This is Haggai, the keeper of the women, the maiden, that's Esther, pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him. And he speedily gave her her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens, which were meet to be given her, out of the king's house. And he preferred, and that word means he transferred. He transferred her and her maids unto the best place in the house of the women. Now, the NASB takes the first phrase there. Now the young lady pleased him and found favor with him, meaning she obtained kindness. But that, while that's more in line with the actual Hebrew, that last phrase can actually be refined even a little bit more. A literal translation would be, and she lifted up, and then there's this word, chesed, loving kindness. goodness, grace to his face. That's a literal translation of that last phrase. Esther, born in Persia, a captive, a Jewish girl in a pagan land, taken into the harem of the king, apparently had such character that in spite of all those things about that situation, she displayed goodness, kindness, grace to this man who was in charge of her fate. Ladies, when you lift up your face to someone, do you do it with grace shining on them? Do they see grace when you look at them? Is there a beauty in your countenance beyond the visual appearance that attracts them? She carried herself with grace. She looked up to his face with grace. Secondly, she could be circumspect. That's a word we don't use very often. It means she could keep a secret. Chapter 2, verse 10. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her she should not show it or tell it. Women who can keep confidences are to be highly regarded. Proverbs 31, that passage of the ideal woman. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. Here you go. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. That means he can share something with her and it stays there. That's what it means. Here she sits in this place where the only purpose for the women there is to learn the ways of beguiling the king and winning his favor. The prize is to become the queen. Months in oils, perfumes, special diets, seductive clothing. Anything she wanted, yet she was able to keep her heritage hidden because her cousin Mordecai had kept her to do so and keep his confidence. And she did it. Apparently, she never thought to herself, well, you know, surely I can share where I come from now with my best friend in this place because, well, they'll understand. I'm going to tell you this because you'll understand, but keep it to yourself. Guess what? Out it goes. And that's not just women, guys. That's us, too. She carried herself with grace and she could keep a secret. Third thing, she remained a teachable person. Look at chapter 2, verse 10, and then put your finger down at verse 20 and hold it there because we're going to read them both together. Ready? Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her she should not show it. Verse 20, Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people, as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. So we consider those two verses together. We already know about Mordecai's instruction, verse 10. But here, later in the year, verse 20, after 6 months in oil of Olay, all right, oil of myrrh, and 6 months in sweet odors, and she's still keeping the confidence. She's still maintaining it. And then the additional statement of verse 20. For Esther did the commandment to Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. Even though she's now a young adult, probably 20-somethings, 20s maybe, maybe 18, 19, somewhere in that area, she is still listening and obeying. We are never too old to learn. You know my joke. I graduated high school in 71. 50 years later, 2021, I graduated again. You're never too old to learn. Even as the new queen in verse 20, she's still willing to learn. Truth is, don't tell Patty. I love learning. And if I didn't have so much to do, I could become and Gerald's going to get this, a real YouTube junkie watching woodworking guys all day long. I have too much to do. And she thinks I watch them all day. I do not. She carried herself with grace. She could keep a secret. She remained a teachable person. Fourth, she maintained her modesty and her authenticity. She does not go it alone. She's not out there on her own. She trusts her advisor, her mentor, if you want to call Haggai that. In verses 12 through 15, we've already read them. We've seen how these young women were treated, especially how Haggai treated Esther in particular. Yet when the time comes, look at verse 15 again, she required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. There's that word. It is safe to say that in that harem for that year of preparation, Esther was surrounded by all kinds of treacherous, conniving, pardon this expression, hypersexed women, all doing whatever they could to become the next queen. And if you don't think that's true, just look around at the world. It's everywhere out there. But not Esther. Not Esther. She asked her mentor, "Hey, guy, why don't you just recommend what you want me to wear and how you want me to be, and I'll do what you suggest." Now, those are 21st century pastors' way of way she acted there. There's an obvious lack of arrogance on this girl's part. Perhaps there's even a lack of some self-confidence. We already know, because we know the whole account, right, that there's a time coming when she's going to be fearful to go in before the king. If she had some arrogance in her, she wouldn't have been, "Oh yeah, no problem, Mordecai, I'll just march right in there. And if he doesn't hold out his scepter, well then I'll just kick his throne." You know, there's none of that there. Fifth, she may have had a quiet, peaceful, unassuming way about her. One scholar wrote, "winsome." I'll bet you young guys don't even know what winsome means, do you? Nope, see, they don't. That's not a word we use anymore. Do you? When was the last time you all used winsome? Winsome means being pleasant, delightful, attractive in a sweet, engaging way, according to Mr. Webster. Our question is, what did the king see in her that made him love her above all the women? Maybe it was this. Maybe there was this pleasant, delightful, attractive, unassuming, sweet, engaging person standing before him. Maybe the king found favor with her. Perhaps she lifted up chesed to his face and he fell in love with her. She carried herself with grace, could keep secret, remained teachable, maintained modesty and authenticity, winsome. Six, she maintained a certain level of humility. This particular character trait has already been seen. She deferred to Haggai. But even after the king has crowned her, she's now the queen. She still keeps Mordecai's confidence, and she does not forget all that she has learned. Sometimes, when our young people reach adulthood, it's as though a switch is thrown. Any of you senior adults notice that? All of a sudden, they forget their parents, along with all that parental wisdom and instruction. All of a sudden, they know everything. They know the end from the beginning. All of a sudden, they have all the answers. When in fact, the truth is, they don't even know what the questions are yet. You get the point. Esther does not appear, one, to forget Mordecai's teachings, and two, she does not appear to experience that sudden change in personality. I'm pretty sure there's a switch. Flip when you turn 18. Paul, did you do that when you turned 18? Oh, I hope not. Should I check with Mom? Esther appears to remain humble, teachable, learning, and obedient. And later actions by Esther will support those statements. But for right now, I'm looking at the clock. I'm prepared to do 3 more weeks worth. No? Historians and biblical scholars fix the date of Esther's coronation between 479 and 478 BC. That's 4 years after Vashti was deposed. Now, we've already seen that King Ahasuerus has been soundly beaten in battle in that four-year interval period by the Greeks. And perhaps that's why the next thing we want to look at is the use of the word release in verse 18. Then the king made a great feast unto all his princes and his servants, even Esther's feast, and he made a release to the provinces and gave gifts according to the state of the king. Hebrew word there is hanachah, and it means a day of rest, a holiday, the giving of rest, or a holiday making. The literal in the original reads this way, translated, when the king made a great feast unto all his princes and his servants, the feast of Esther. This is quite the party. Apparently, it's a national holiday. Everybody got a day off. My guess is they got more than a day off, but everybody got a day off of work, and then the king gave gifts. I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for President Biden to declare a national holiday and thus to get a gift from him. All 127 provinces, all over the place, the whole kingdom. I don't know what the gift was. Text doesn't tell us. That's not the point. He was obviously more than thrilled that Esther is now his queen. There are some historical precedents for a king giving what we might call a tax holiday. Do you remember when North Carolina used to do that? Do you remember what they used to do? August or something, late July, you'd have a tax-free weekend on school supplies and stuff. And if you had the money, you'd go out and buy a brand new computer. Pay no tax. Then we got a Democratic governor. Herodotus wrote this about another Persian king. Perhaps it is relevant that when the false Smerdis ascended the throne of Persia in 522 BC, he granted his subjects freedom from taxation and military service for a period of 3 years. I guarantee you President Biden will not do that. Well, who was false Smerdis? He was a controversial character. He sat on the throne of Persia for a mere 7 months after Cambyses and before Darius, from March to September of 522 BC. This is a historical record. So what this king is doing is not really out of the ordinary or particularly unusual. Anyway, this has been a difficult 4 years, and our king is more than happy to proclaim a national holiday. Now, the next paragraph in the text actually begins with verse 19. And when the virgins were gathered together the second time, and this is an odd statement. Honestly, I have researched, I have looked not far and wide, but enough, and I have not found a scholar who's willing to step out on a limb and definitively say what that phrase means. They all have lots of good speculation. I'll share one or two of them with you. It is possible that all the remaining virgin women were assembled to see that one of them, Esther, had finally brought the contest to an end. It's not that they could go home. You got to remember something here. This is a pagan court. This is a pagan, wicked, rotten king. All these women go to his harem. After all, he hasn't checked them out yet. Yeah. Or perhaps this pagan king, famous for his many marital failures, simply wanted to show off the most beautiful women of his kingdom and that he chose this one out. We don't know. Sorry. But what is important is the next phrase. Then Mordecai sat in the king's gate. And again, we are not told why or how he gets there. But apparently Mordecai was given a position of some responsibility in the government of Persia. We know that it's a position of responsibility because he's sitting in the king's gate. And we know that this is where much legal business was conducted, in the king's gate, where legal issues and disputes were adjudicated, where citizens' complaints were handled. We also know that this is the location where Mordecai was able to hear about the plot to assassinate the king. We also know that these two guys who are doing this plot, we'll see it in just a second, are significant government officials. They are the keeper of the door. You've got to go past them to get in to the king. Look at 21. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan, or some versions say Bigthana, and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were angry, wroth, and they sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified, note that word, the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition, that should probably be inquiry, inquisition happened on January 6th, was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. All right, this is one of those things where if this were a movie, the director would throw this little scene in there in some obscure way and leave us all hanging. What's that all about? Who knows? Well, it's about a whole lot. A whole lot. And it's when it works itself out in a wonderful and almost humorous kind of way. Not tonight. We'll have to keep coming back. In any event, we need to finish for tonight. Here we have these two previously unknown to us Persian chamberlains who are angry with the king. Now, a couple of observations. Number one, they are eunuchs. That's the word that's actually used in the Hebrew, not chamberlain. Second, their names are Persian. They are not Jewish. I can tell you what their names mean. I have no clue if this is important. Bigthana means in their wine press, and Teresh means strictness, for whatever that's worth. Third thing to observe, of those which kept the door, simply means that they were two of a larger group which guarded the door, hence access to the king. By the same token, king would have gone in and out of that door. Fourth, they sought to lay hand on the king. That is a euphemism, for they sought to kill the king. Simple as that. Verse 22. The thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen. Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. This plot to kill the king was discovered by Mordecai, who told Esther, who told the king. Mordecai learned about this. Now, there's a curious word there, certified. Only occurs in English two times in the entire Bible. And the other time, it's a different word. Here, in English, it's a difficult word, or a curious word. In Hebrew, it's not. You've already seen it. It's amar, to say or to speak, used 5,308 times. We required nothing but what Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the keeper of the women, appointed. Same word, back in verse 15. What he said, what Mordecai said, what Esther said. There's a lot of saying going on in here. And not a lot of answers. They'll come later. What Haggai appointed, what he said, Esther did. Now, it's what Mordecai said, Esther certified. She said to the king. Verse 23. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Justice, sure, swift, complete. That's the Persian court way. That's how it is. King's word, it's done. Many verses in the future here. Esther will fear for her life because Mordecai will ask her to go in to the king uninvited. You know the account. I'm not spoiling anything in the future for you. We know that she's going to be fearful. And I do have to wonder if she thought of Bigtha and Teresh and how swiftly that sentence was carried out when their plot was confirmed to be true. Some interesting things to consider about Esther. Even though she's in the wrong place at the wrong time, which got her caught up in the wrong kind of a contest, God will have her in the right place at the right time to do what the right thing is. See, all this stuff that's going on here, where's God in it? From the text. Where is He? All the things that are going on right now in our world, look at Ukraine, look at Africa, look at the Uyghur people in China, look at the Holy Land, all these things going on in our world right now, where's God? He's here. He's here. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. So be very careful how we judge people, both saved or unsaved. Remember what we can learn about this lady right here that we might have a tendency to misjudge. Remember that she carried herself with grace. She could keep confidences. She remained teachable, even when she became the queen to the most powerful king at that time in existence. She maintained her modesty and authenticity. She was winsome. She was sweet about doing it. And she maintained a certain level of humility. More next time.